right, well, I'll start with saying a few things. So I'd like to say a little bit about the Buddha's own spiritual journey, which led to his enlightenment, and the questions that he asked himself along the way. So just a note about terminology. The Buddha, the word Buddha means awake, and we generally use this word to refer to the historical Buddha who lived 2,600 years ago, but really just to refer to him after his enlightenment, which it is said that took place when he was around 35 years old. So before his enlightenment, I'll refer to him by his family name, given name, Siddhartha Gautama, or sometimes he's referred to as the Bodhisattva. He's kind of on his way to becoming enlightened. So if I'm using that terminology, it's before the Buddha's enlightenment or awakening. So the Buddha made an interesting comment about suffering. He said that suffering leads to either confusion, bewilderment, or it can lead to a search. So in the Buddha's own life story, his encounters with suffering led to a search. And some of you might have heard of some of the different aspects of the Buddha's own story when he was younger. So he was born Siddhartha Gautama. Siddhartha is his given name. Gautama is his family name. He was born a prince. His father, the king, so this would be in north central India around 2,600 years ago. And his father, the king, wanted to kind of protect Siddhartha from any difficulties he might encounter in life. And he wanted very much for Siddhartha to become the king when it was the appropriate time to take over his own role. So it is said that the early years of Siddhartha Gautama was very pleasant, and he had a very protected life. So at a certain point, Siddhartha decided he would travel beyond the palace walls. And I guess he was curious what was out there. And he was accompanied by his charioteer, whose name was Chana. And so he decided to investigate and go beyond the palace walls. And he saw some things that he found very disturbing. So it is said that the first thing he saw that was disturbing was a very old person, someone who was kind of hunched over, who could hardly walk, and he had not seen something like this before. And he asked Chana, well, what's this? I don't understand. And Chana said, well, this is an old person. This is normal. Everyone ages. And then Siddhartha saw a very sick person, extremely sick, and he hadn't seen anything like this before. And he, again, he asked Chana, and he said, well, this is someone who's experiencing sickness. We all experience sickness in our life. And then the third thing he saw that was disturbing was he saw a corpse. Corpse on his way to cremation site. Again, he didn't know what this was, and he asked Chana, and he said, well, that's a dead person. Anyone who is born will eventually die, so this is part of being human. And these three sites are actually referred to as the heavenly messengers. So then he saw something. He saw a samana. He saw a spiritual seeker, someone who had stepped out of the regular society and was on a spiritual quest to investigate more deeply kind of this human condition we're in. So that's actually also called a heavenly messenger. So altogether, these are called the four heavenly messengers: the aging, sickness, death, and this samana, the spiritual seeker. So the four heavenly messengers. So it seems that Siddhartha decided to not follow the path he was kind of born into and that his father wanted, and he decided to leave the palace and become a samana. And embark on his own quest. And with that seeking was accompanied by a question. And that question is usually referred to as, is it possible to find something which is not subject to aging, sickness, and death, what he referred to as the deathless. So when I first heard this question, it didn't resonate that much with me. I think the deathless is not a term we normally use. But then I realized that the term deathless is also used to refer to Nibbana or Nirvana, liberation or freedom, enlightenment. So this is the question that he took with him on his journey, and it seemed that journey took 6 years. He tried out different things. He tried out different spiritual practices. He tried out sought out various teachers, practiced various concentration techniques that he found lacking, didn't actually answer his question, and that he could experience, say, the deathless. It seemed like he could experience states that were probably blissful, but they were temporary and depended on the conditions, so they were impermanent. So other related questions to this, could I experience the deathless, that I think fit into this quest is, can I find a happiness which is long-term and lasting rather than short-term and temporary and impermanent? A happiness which is not dependent on conditions. And another question, which seems to me to go along with his other questions, were, are there actions that I can take in this life which can lead me to experience a long-term happiness? And these actions could be of body, speech, or mind. So it seemed that for this search, this which took this period of 6 years, the Buddha kept posing questions to himself. So one example is related in a sutta, and it's called the Two Kinds of Thoughts Sutta. And so he's addressing some monks, and he is remembering back to his own search, and he says to the monks that when he was, I think he uses the term, an unenlightened bodhisattva, which refers to before he was enlightened. So it occurred to me, suppose that I divide my thoughts into two classes. Then I set on one side thoughts of sensual desire, thoughts of ill will, and thoughts of cruelty. And then on the other side, these two categories, he put the other side thoughts of renunciation, thoughts of goodwill, and thoughts of kindness. So the opposite of the first grouping. So on the first in the first grouping, the first category were skillful, wholesome thoughts, thoughts of, well, I should say, I guess as I read it, it was the unskillful that he was the first category, the thoughts of sensual desire, thoughts of ill will, and thoughts of cruelty. And then on the other side, the other category were these skillful thoughts, thoughts of renunciation, thoughts of goodwill, and thoughts of kindness. So then he reported to the monks that he was talking to that at the time what happened, so it's almost like he's doing an experiment. I wonder what would happen if I divided my thoughts into these two different categories. He found that he was more likely to have skillful thoughts when he divided them this way and less likely to have unskillful thoughts. So that was the result of this this experiment that he made. So that's one example of kind of questions that the Buddha asked himself. Well, I should say the Bodhisattva asked himself on his own journey. So then after 6 years of trying different things, he came to this site in Bodh Gaya in India, northern India, and he made a vow that he was going to sit under the Bodhi tree until he understood very deeply this human condition and if he could experience the deathless. And that's so that is what happened on that night of his awakening. So on the night of his awakening, he actually answered that question that he initially posed when he left the palace. That question was, is it possible to experience the deathless or nibbana? And he answered that question then on the night of his awakening. So then, here's a quote from Ajahn Jeff talking about the questions the Buddha asked, or the Bodhisattva asked during his journey, which led to his awakening. The Buddha's own path of practice to awakening was directed by the questions he asked himself. The more skillful he became in asking and answering the right questions, the closer he came to release. He encouraged his students to ask questions of him and of themselves in just the same way. Thus, for anyone interested in practicing the Buddha's teachings, an important dimension is in formulating the questions you ask yourself in the course of your practice. So then, following the Buddha's awakening, he considered whether it was whether he would be able to teach what he had realized during this night of awakening. And at first he was not sure if anyone would actually get it. He used language like, well, this is really subtle and hard to see. And he thought that people had too much dust in their eyes and would not be able to understand this, and it would not be fruitful. So there's an interesting interaction that is reported when the Buddha was engaged in this kind of thought. Apparently, it is said that Sahampati is from the Brahma realm, so a high a god realm, came down and approached the Buddha and asked him if he would teach. And he said he thought that there were people with little dust in their eyes who would understand. So the Buddha reconsidered, and he kind of surveyed the world, and then he reconsidered his position and thought that indeed there were those with little dust in their eyes who would understand these teachings. So then he went on to teach for the next 45 years. So thanks to Sahampati that we have these, the Buddha reconsidered, and we have these teachings 2,600 years later. So the Buddha then went on to teach for the next 45 years. And one thing that impresses me when I just kind of survey the suttas, the teachings of the Buddha, is he taught all kinds of different people. And, you know, from kings to paupers, all different castes, outcasts, every kind of person, monastics, lay people. And very often the way the teachings are presented is someone would come up to the Buddha and ask a question, and then the teaching comes out of his response to the question or the interaction with the person asking. So the Buddha actually said that there were four different kind of categories of answers that he gave. And this is what I'll be talking about this afternoon in the talk. But I'll just outline them here without going into detail. I'll go into detail this afternoon. But the four ways that the Buddha answered questions are, number one, a categorical answer. Number two, an analytical answer. Number three, cross-questioning, i.e. answering a question with a question. And number four are the questions he did not answer. So sometimes referred to as questions to be set aside. So this afternoon I'll talk about those different ways the Buddha answered questions and give some examples from the suttas.